Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, a new week is upon us. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, whereat resides the Listen Live button, by which one may most easily listen to the program, be it live or the 24-hour a day, as long as the crappy internet service provider connection is holding up, 24-hour a day rerun stream. Or the live stream like right now. It is the 20th day of May, 2013. Yes, this is a live show, and my apologies for the fact that there was not a live show on Friday. But apparently, some storms moved into the area Friday evening, and Chantel's internet service ran under the bed and hid. Sheesh. Deeply frustrating, to say the least. But we begin a new week. And we begin a new week. Last week was kind of tiresome. Three straight days of all-day meetings. And it took all of Sunday to just sort of get my head back in the game. But it is back in the game. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the PayPal button and the traditional carbon-intensive mail address by which you can help us keep all of this on the air. Thanks going out this evening to Robert in Australia for taking it with his 20th of the month down under, I would say challenge, but he said, no, it's just a contribution this month, not a challenge. But if you would like to respond to it as such, it certainly would be helpful. Between a couple of folks who kicked in over the weekend, $70 would get us to the point where Robert's challenge, if it was one, had been answered. And we'd be scrabbling back away from the hole that we found ourselves in. We found ourselves in because of the way April wound up. And yes, I do know, in fact, what today is, besides just being the beginning of the week.
That's right. Hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Moran Monday. Right-wing Morans of all shapes, sizes, and constitutions. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you can see Morans that will shock you, amaze you, stun you, fill you with loathing and horror. People being admitted to the Moran Monday tent are advised to hang on to wallets and purses and small children because the Morans can get grabby. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them much. That's right. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
Oh yes, you will. And while we do have, in fact, a bumper crop for this evening, seems we always do, I'd like to start with a recent favorite of mine for a Moran nomination, Adam Kokesh. who apparently had a little time out from organizing his armed march on Washington, D.C., to go and smoke some dope in Philadelphia. On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia, as long as it's not with Adam Kokesh. So, small-time possession has been decriminalized in Philly. And so every now and then, and, you know, I'm the last guy in the world to suggest, I would never, I personally, I think it should be not only decriminalized, but legalized. You know, legalize it, man. Really? This is the forefront of protecting liberty? Oh, God. Raw Story reporting that in Philadelphia, marijuana possession under 30 grams is punishable by a small fine, and the offense is classified similarly to a parking ticket. And so as a result of that, folks have been taking to going to Independence National Historical Park in Philly. Except for this last Sunday, they had a, what was it, a smoke down. And Philadelphia, because it's a, you know, it's a state park and everything, or National Historic Park, the police had posted signs saying the possession and or use of controlled substances is prohibited. So Adam, who is versus the man, went to the smoke down, and as the clock ticked down to 4:20 Sunday afternoon, people with the PA system started hollering, "Lot that!" There probably weren't very many rednecks in the audience. "Light that shit." And then Adam Kokesh, Moran, got the microphone in his hand and, being a shameless publicity whore, hollered, "Fuck the law." Oh, darn. Little Timmy, little Cindy, don't ever use that word, okay? At least until you're at least 21 years old. But he did. That's what he said. "Fuck the law. Smoke it anyway. Bring it in. Hey, everybody show some love. Make it difficult for the police here." If this is a harbinger of what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. on July the 4th, well, I think Agnes was right. We won't be there. Five people got arrested. Kokesh, Koresh, whatever, are still in the Hooskow waiting for a bail hearing. And reminder, it was on federal land. You know, our land, yours, mine, we the people. So it may be a federal crime. Of course, it'll be a case of the man keeping Adam Kokesh down. Look, I'm not the reefer madness guy. I'm not the one who's going to sit here and say, but you know what? Sparking up a number in the Independence National Historical Park is not the same as Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat on the bus, or, as some Moran recently referred to her, Rosetta Stone. No, really, the stupid, it hurts us. And by the way, when they come along to arrest you in your act of civil disobedience, part of that is saying, "Okay, well, here I am, arrest me." Not hanging on to your microphone as if it was some sort of lifeline. He began to scream, "I'm being assaulted by an officer of the law. This is a criminal act." At which point, Alex
Jones
followed up by saying that he was being deliberately targeted by federal officers. No, deliberately targeted by federal officers is when they burst through your door and you're not doing anything. You know, sort of like the incident out in California. When you're deliberately violating the law in order to get arrested, that's not targeting. I mean, if anybody's being targeted, the individual is targeting the authorities, right?
Alex Jones
thinks that the man targeted Adam because he's planning an armed march on Washington, D.C. In which case, well, maybe if you're really committed to your armed march on Washington, D.C., you don't want to go to a smoke down and holler, F the law. He wasn't arrested for saying F the law. He couldn't be arrested for saying F the law. That's protected speech. Oh, the morons ye have always with ye. In profusion, in 3D, in perpetuity, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, you're right, Sparky, in the chat room, Sparky. You know, yeah, it seems like the morons sprout up over the weekend. Well, we've had a lot of rain here, and I don't know, maybe they propagate like mushrooms or dandelion fluff or something like that. For heaven's sakes. Oh, and by the way, I got to play something for you. For those of you who are subscribed to the Horn Dropbox, if you go and look in the Horn Dropbox, you will find files. One's called Justice, one's called Monsters Among Us, another one is called Welcome to Your Congress. They've all been created by a brilliant artist by the name of Duke, who sent them to me and alerted me to them. They're there for your enjoyment. Apparently, our discussion Thursday of Louis Gohmert and his concerns about his asparagus, his vegetable Tourette's, really had a certain degree of resonance among our little group, our family, our commune. I even got one further suggestion that this is from, and I'm sorry, I can't remember your name right now because I don't have the email in front of me, but this is the dawning of the age of asparagus. Anybody want to take a run at that parody? Anybody want to work on that lyric? Because that would be beautiful. That would be perfect. But anyway, Duke, who is a musician and a creative artist, took the snippets from our discussion of Louis Gohmert and his asparagus problem and made art out of it. And it just blows my mind that could happen. I don't think about a whole lot. I don't think a whole lot about what goes on here being art. But Duke turned it into art, and it deserves to be heard. Duke just calls this Welcome to Your Congress.
Gentlemen will suspend. Will the gentleman will suspend?
Welcome to your Congress.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early?
You gotta pay real close attention.
Regular orders, the chairman. Aspersions on my asparagus.
What? Asparagus? Asparagus. Casting aspersions on my asparagus. What's he got? Vegetable Tourette's?
Louis Gohmert, proud representative of the 1st District of Texas. Representing God knows how many countless hundreds of thousands of people who were baffled by shoelaces, accused the Attorney General of the United States of, and I quote, casting aspersions on my asparagus. Jesus. This guy thinks that global warming is a hoax.
The sergeant-at-arms will get a blowgun, put a Thorazine dart in his jackanapes neck.
Right.
You are seriously getting on my prunes, Mr. Attorney General.
Louis Gohmert, baffled by wheelbarrows.
You know what? It's an especially lovely morning when that's how it starts. Thank you, Duke. And yeah, for those of you who are subscribed to the Dropbox, the Horn Dropbox, it's in there if you want to download it yourself and just enjoy it. I think Duke's okay with that. And listen to his other cuts: Justice, Monsters Among Us. But it's Moran Monday, and well, yeah, it's almost like we get to re-nominate Louis, because aspersions on my asparagus just doesn't come around. I don't know, it's kind of like Halley's Comet. It doesn't happen every day. So, enjoy. Ron in Raleigh says, hey, Bob, I'd like to make a Moran nomination. No, this time it's not Tom Hartman. I'd like to nominate Okie Senator Jim Inhofe. I don't wish any harm on the people of Oklahoma, but I find it ironic that even as I write this, a giant tornado is slowly destroying Oklahoma City. Just remember, global climate change is a hoax. Yes, absolutely a hoax. And that those hoaxes have been raising hell all across the plains of the United States in the last couple of days. And then, speaking of climate change, then there's the story that I read out of the New York Times earlier today. And while it's not climate change directly, it's in the same ballpark. Headline of the story, Wells Dry, Fertile Plains Turn to Dust. Have we seen this movie before? Midwest? Plains? Drought? Dust? Somebody went bowling? No, I'm not talking about the guy who went bowling and shot himself in the leg bowling. Well, you never know when you're going to need your peacemaker down there to the rainbow lanes. And every now and then somebody will come along and try to... I mean, you got to work hard to find just that right. And you know what? The rental shoes, if you find a pair that fits, by God, they're worth killing over. No, really, the guy shot himself in the leg while bowling. And while we do not laugh at this, while we do not find any firearm injury funny, there is something suspect about the mind of a human being that is so insecure as to require a deadly firearm, a pistol, whose only purpose really is the maiming and killing of another human being, feeling like you just got to really have that if you're going to bowl a few frames. Remember those scenes of Fred Flintstone's style when he and Barney would go bowling?
with the up on his tippy toes. And what if he had a six shooter strapped to his hip while he was doing it? Wouldn't that look a little stupid? Man accidentally shoots self while bowling, police say. Police say, huh? Police say. Witnesses say bowling ball hit victim's leg at Jupiter Lanes. A man accidentally shot himself in the leg while bowling at Jupiter Lanes about 7:30 p.m. Tuesday. Jupiter Lanes being, this is out of WPBF. I'm taking that to mean Palm Beach, Florida. Oh, okay, I understand. It's Palm. Yeah, okay, it's Florida. And that's a stand your ground and shoot anybody that scares you state. So you never know. There may be all kinds of scary people at the Jupiter Lanes. Because a lot of people go to the bowling alley with ulterior motives. A man accidentally shot himself in the leg while bowling at Jupiter Lanes about 7:30 p.m. last Tuesday. Witnesses said the man had been carrying a gun in the pocket of his shorts. Jim Miller said, "The guy just stepped up to bowl. I think he hit his leg on his back swing. The ball hit him in the leg, which triggered the revolver." Okay. Because, you know, it's Florida, and you got your short pants on, and they're kind of loose and baggy and got a roomy pocket on. Maybe there's some of them cargo shorts or whatnot. And let's see, I'm going to need my car keys, a little bit of cash. I need my lighter. Got my smokes. Wallet in the back pocket. What am I forgetting? Oh, yeah, I'm going to drop my Detective Special 38 caliber revolver there in my pocket in case anything gets out of hand down to Jupiter Lanes. Never know. One of them youngins might show up carrying a bag of Skittles and an iced tea can, and well, we know what happens then. Oh, what was that comedian's name? Yakov Smirnov. America, what a country! Everybody kind of stopped. Deborah Dean saw it happen. She said, "Everybody kind of stopped. We were way down on this end. Everybody was looking, and all of a sudden, you can tell something wasn't right." He was taken to St. Mary's Medical Center as a precaution. You know, just a precaution. Make of it what you will. But anyway, back to Kansas, Dorothy. It's a story about the aquifer that farmers have been tapping in Kansas for generations now to irrigate their crops. And while the story makes no tie-in to fracking or anything like that, or even to the Keystone XL pipeline, what it boils down to is, as the story by Michael Wines notes, 49 years ago, Ashley Yost's grandfather sank a well deep into a half-mile square of rich Kansas farmland. He struck an artery of water so prodigious that he could pump 1,600 gallons to the surface every minute. Yeah, like there's little Keebler elves down there, just magical Keebler elves who just go wee into the aquifer, and since they're magical Keebler elves, it's pure water and not wee as we understand it. Last year, Mr. Yost was coaxing just 300 gallons from the earth and pumping up sand in order to do it. By harvest time, the grit had robbed him. Ascribing motives and anthropomorphic human intentions to things and processes that are not capable of them. I want to talk about that for a minute. In this case, the grit robbed Mr. Yost of $20,000 worth of well pumps. Mr. Yost's determination to get every last goddamn drop of water out of the ground and onto his crops. Now, that didn't rob him of the, how many, $20,000 worth of well pumps. The sand did it. Just like last night, as I was tuning in to catch the Libya episode of Anthony Bourdain, there was a Chicken Noodle News meteorologist talking about the tornadoes that were blasting the bejesus out of Oklahoma. And he said that the tornadoes were, and this is Moran Monday, and this is kind of Moran stuff, really. He said that the tornadoes were targeting Oklahoma, or the Midwest, or Jesus Land, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Targeting. And I just had a little bitty, itsy-bitsy, tiny, low-rent hissy in that instant. I think I even tweeted about it. Maybe I didn't. But he said that the tornadoes were targeting Oklahoma. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't an allegation like that rather imply intelligence on the part of the tornado? Or is it intelligence on the part of whoever sent the tornado? In which case, I guess God done it to them? I'm kind of stumped here. So there's that, and then there's the idea of targeting. We're in a place here in the second decade of the 21st century where we ascribe military eliminationist language even to non-intellectual, non-intelligent natural processes. And that says a little bit about us. Targeting, I've noticed, the word target keeps popping up in the language more and more of late. The IRS targeted Tea Party groups. The Department of Justice targeted the AP. And in Oklahoma, we have tornadoes that target communities there. There's actually a fairly profound philosophical discussion to be had that runs underneath that concept of targeting. I think we could probably say that tornadoes have been happening in this neck of the woods, or plains, for quite a while. It is the frequency, however, that's becoming more than a little bit scary. Those were anyone who's never been through a tornado. It's a crazy ass experience, and it's scary as hell. And what comes after is mind-blowing. I mean, it looks like the entire place just get erased. And, of course, then the for-profit media will find some human being who's half in shock who will say something like, I guess God just spared my life. While people are digging through the rubbles, the rubble to find the people whose lives God did not spare. And they're totally oblivious to the fact that, well, never mind. So anyway, in Kansas, in Haskell County, Kansas, they went absolutely hog wild with that water that was pumping 1,600 gallons a minute, and now they can't get 300. And that's a problem. And it's a pretty good news story, as journalism goes. Vast stretches, Michael Wines writes, vast stretches of Texas farmland lying over the aquifer no longer support irrigation. In west central Kansas, up to a fifth of the irrigated farmland along a 100-mile swath of the aquifer has already gone dry. In many other places, there is no longer enough water to supply farmers' peak needs during Kansas's scorching summers. Okay. Then the article notes, God, I'm beginning to sound like, I gotta stop doing the Alex Jones voice. And when the groundwater runs out, it's gone for good. Refilling the aquifer would require hundreds, if not thousands, of years of rains. And I think it's probably more like thousands. Like tens of thousands, maybe. Because that water in that aquifer is ancient water. Water trapped millennia upon millennia ago in that aquifer. Maybe even when the continent wasn't the continent as we understand it to be. Michael Wines refers to it as a slow-motion crisis. Decades in the making, imminent for some, years or decades away for others, hitting one farm but leaving an adjacent one untouched. Kind of like a tornado. But he says, the effects of depletion are evident everywhere. Highway bridges span arid stream beds. Most of the creeks and rivers that once veined the land have dried up as 60 years of pumping have pulled groundwater levels down by scores and even hundreds of feet. The Kansas Geological Survey, you know, more of that non-job-creating government. The Kansas Geological Survey says that the average water level in the state's portion of the aquifer dropped 4.25 feet, nearly a third of the total decline, and that's happened since 1996. Lane Letourneau is a manager of the State Agricultural Department's Water Resources Division. Lane Letourneau says, I know my staff went out and remeasured a couple of wells because they couldn't believe it. There was a 30-foot decline. Water. You know, the water that my dear friend Holly reminded me on my Facebook page today. Water that the CEO of Nestle, for instance, says should be property to be controlled by corporations just like everything else on this planet, and nobody really has a human right to water. A corporation has the right to own the water and to charge you for consuming it, but you as a human being who are in fact water-based, I mean, let's not get lose sight of the fact that just because we look kind of solid and stuff. Yeah, you've seen James Cameron's movie The Abyss, right? And the creatures that are kind of fluid and can go through doors because they're made out of water and they reconstitute themselves and stuff, and it's a beautiful film. I like it better than Avatar in many ways. Well, those creatures that are made of water, those are metaphors for us. Because we're mostly water. You ever seen one of those mummies that was deliberately set out up on a high arid peak in the Andes by peoples there? There's just not a hell of a lot left of us when the water's gone. Freeze-dried human does not a big impression make. Oh, okay, that's right, Lottie. That wasn't a creature, Bob. It was the butterfly people manipulating water and polymerizing it. Still, it's the same principle. It's a metaphor for us. So, Kansas has just about drained itself dry. And these are all places that require irrigation. Because the growing season is such that they don't get enough rain to support the crops. Because, well, summer. And then, of course, but we're a country that doesn't do that whole navel-gazing, history-learning thing. Irrigation was invented, unless I've completely remembered it wrongly or learned it wrongly, irrigation was invented there between the Tigris and Euphrates River, areas that look like desert, you know, zoom in on Google Earth or whatever. It used to be lush, irrigated cropland until the soil became salinated and wouldn't grow anything anymore. The Sahara Desert, vast swaths of lifeless sand, there was a time when that was a grassland, a savanna. You know, a grassland, a prairie, if you will. Prairie, sort of like, I don't know, Kansas. But we can't, for the most part, as a nation and as a people, we can't draw those conclusions. We think if we've got the technology to do something, that is therefore an excuse to go ahead and do it without giving any thought whatsoever to whether or not there's an ought to involved with it. So just because you can pump 1,600 gallons per minute, well, that means you should pump 1,600 gallons per minute. But what are they growing? That is covered in the article. They're growing, especially since George W. Bush's biofuels initiative boondoggle, they're growing corn. Now, as someone with a great degree of reverence for the people who built magnificent civilizations, on this side of the planet, long before the white folks got here and started screwing the pooch. Well, maize, you call it corn. Maize is one of the most fascinating stories in all of human existence. I think I've remarked before that the plant that used to be, the plant from which we, the corn, maize, comes is a grass called teosinte, and it has almost no resemblance whatsoever to the stalks that are as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like they're growing straight up to the sky. We got from point A to point Z16 by human activity over thousands and thousands of years. And maize has amazing properties because it's got nutritional values that other cereal grains simply don't have. But it's also water intensive. And so when George W. Bush, and the article notes it, when George W. Bush announced the biofuels initiative, lots and lots and lots of farmers turned to corn for their crops. They didn't start growing corn because the world is a hungry place by and large, and corn is very effective at feeding hungry populations. No, hell no. They started growing corn because they could sell the corn to people who would ferment it and then distill it into alcohol, which could be run in internal combustion gasoline engines. Hence that sign on your local fuel pump, your gas pump, that says this gasoline may contain up to 10% alcohol. And so these farmers switched to corn. But they didn't switch to, say, early Sun Glow or Silver Queen or Silver Princess or... No. They switched to number 2 field grade Roundup Ready corn. Brought to you by Monsanto. We've spliced a weasel gene into your corn. What could possibly go wrong? No matter where you go, nor how hard you try, if you buy corn to take home and cook or put on the grill and roast or however you plan to do it, you ain't buying no number 2 field grade corn. You're buying a variety of corn that has been specifically hybridized to yield sweet, fat, luscious, juicy, wonderful kernels. On the other hand, number 2 field grade corn you could cook from now until Gabriel blows a Louis Armstrong tune on his trumpet, and you can't eat number 2 field grade corn. Cows aren't supposed to, but they're compelled to. Number 2 field grade corn goes into biofuels. Number 2 field grade corn goes to the fracking plants where they turn it into high fructose corn syrup or maltodextrin or any number of other semi-toxic products. But you can't eat it. And it isn't feeding a starving world. And it takes a hell of a lot more water to grow that than it does wheat or barley or even soybeans. Mr. Wine's news story in the New York Times says the villain in this story is, in fact, the farmer's savior, the center pivot irrigator. Anybody who's ever flown over that part of the country, you see all these round green circles that, well, that's from center point irrigators, center pivot irrigators. A quarter or half mile of pipe that traces a watery circle around a point in the middle of a field. The center pivots helped start a revolution that raised farming from hardscrabble work to a profitable business. Mr. Wines sees that as the villain. I'm not sure I agree. I mean, yeah, that's a case of developing technology and saying, hey, y'all, look here. But I think there are villains, and then there are villains. Corporations that have tried to turn farming from something that is subsistence-based, where the excess goes onto the market and feeds a hungry nation, into something that has, well, by God, look at our quarterly profit and loss statement there, Mr. Murgatroyd. What can we do to maximize that? The shareholders are wanting a bigger dividend in the next quarter, and by God, we'd better bring it to them. Well, let's pump more water! Jim writing in, he says, according to scientists, loss of water is second on the list of doomsday scenarios. How long can one live without water? Yeah. Air, water. Don and Maureen writing in from good old Arizona, Stan, targeting Oklahoma. Based on my previous remarks. Has anyone set the over-under on when Pat Robertson will say it's God who's targeting Oklahoma because gays can get married, or how long Tourette's Gohmert will blame the devastation on legalized abortion? After all, climate change surely has nothing to do with the increasing intensity of tornadoes over years. Oh, yeah, that. I don't know if I'll even touch that one. If we go to Right Wing Watch, he may have already, rightwingwatch.org, he may have already done it. But of course, that makes perfect sense. God is blasting the bejesus out of Oklahoma because gay folks can now get married in Minnesota. That theology can't make it work. So, I don't know. And then, of course, as far as a Moran Monday nomination goes, it would... we couldn't get out of this first segment of Moran Monday without mentioning another aspiring right-wing hate monger, blatherskate, by the name of Pete Santilli. Pete Santilli calls himself a radio talk show host ready to take my show to national syndication. That is, of course, if the FCC-regulated AM/FM radio stations can handle my truth and honesty. I'm also an optimistic reality shock doom and gloomer, and always have been. As a matter of fact, I was doom and gloomer way before everyone else jumped on the bandwagon. It all started from me back in the early 80s when I was in the United States Marine Corps. Back then, I was exposed to some of the back-channel ways of the world during the height of the Cold War, and believe me, I discovered at a very early age that the Wizard of Oz is merely a small old man in a velvet green suit. Pulling levers and pushing buttons behind the big green curtain, everything shocking that happens these days is either by design or default, which is why I'm a self-described info warrior. As Alex Jones puts it, there's a war for your mind, and it's a well-known fact that you are not winning. Everything you supposedly perceive as reality has been fabricated by the Wizard of Oz, the little old man behind the curtain. So he's ready to go national. You want to know how we know he's ready to go national? Yeah, this. Oh, for heaven's sakes. I hate it when this happens. Yeah, you know what's coming, right? Let's try this again.
My hair has multiple.
Oh, I don't care about your hair. I hate these goddamn commercials. I just want the stupid sound. Eventually, everything, if it isn't already, everything on the internet will be monetized. Yeah, let's go back to Pete Santilli.
I want to remind you that in Benghazi, Miss Hillary, the freaking biggest vagina on the face of the planet, told troops to stand down and to not go in and interfere with the operation that they set up. Because they're moving arms, I want to shoot her right in the vagina. And just really, I don't want her to die right away. I want her to feel the pain, and I want to look her in the eyes. And I want to say, on behalf of all Americans that you've killed, on behalf of the Navy SEALs, the families of Navy SEAL Team 6 who were involved in the fake hunt down of this Obama bin Laden thing, that whole fake scenario, because these Navy SEALs know the truth, they killed them all. On behalf of all of those people, I'm supporting our troops by saying we need to try, convict, and shoot Hillary Clinton in the vagina.
Oh, yeah, he's ready for national syndication. No, he's ready for a second Thorazine dart in the neck. Might take a third. The right wing cherishes this. This is the dialogue of a patriotic nation. I am not often rendered speechless. But I am almost here. Let's see, he's ready to take his show to national syndication. If the FCC-regulated AM/FM radio stations can handle my truth and honesty. Yeah, he said, I want to pull the trigger. He also advocated the shooting of the President of the United States. Oddly enough, there was nothing to be heard about Pete Santilli back when a couple of entirely illegal wars were being waged by a guy that one may assume he voted for. By the way, he doubled down. He said, if you have a problem with wanting to shoot, well, he says that if you have a problem with wanting to shoot, like the president or the secretary of state, that you're an enemy of the state. So, there you go. That's the Patriot movement. That's the those are the people who consider themselves patriots. And yes, before you write me an email saying, why are you giving this guy publicity, Bob? Because sometimes we like to think that, it's just an isolated incident. It's becoming less and less isolated. But understand, whether it's an armed march on Washington, D.C., or this guy with his murder, his sexualized murder fantasy, or calling a young woman a slut for having the audacity to talk about women's reproductive health care rights. These are all manifestations of the yearning bloodlust and the absolute sickening misogyny that is rolling like a wave across this country. It comes from fear, it comes from hate. The hate itself comes from fear. And I really don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the remedy is. For the longest time in this country, we operated under the theory that the best remedy to bad speech is to have more speech. But I don't know if that necessarily applies in a country where more speech just means more right-wingery. The phrase that used to be used was the marketplace of ideas. Well, when almost every stall on the main thoroughfare of the marketplace of ideas is filled with Santillis and Savages and Becks and Joneses, etc., etc. You notice how we don't even bother to mention Michael the Savage Wiener anymore? It's kind of sad, isn't it? No, not really. And then in order to find the good speech that will counter it, you've got to go way into the far back darkened sub-basement corners of the marketplace of ideas to even hear something from the other side. Well, that's not an open marketplace, is it? Hardly. You can say that this is just an idiot babbling on, but another idiot will hear the idiot. And what do you do when the idiot goes out and takes a bunch of guns to go and do the first idiot's bidding, as has already happened in the past? They're not our friends. Not at all. By the way, email coming in from Robert in Australia. He says, 3 points for Monday. One, if you'd like to make my contribution to match Robert's contribution challenge, or perhaps say help us clear the April-May shortfall challenge, that's fine. So, yes, and in fact, $70 will provide that match. Two, Tony Abbott, head of the Federal Liberal Party, think Republican, in Australia, has promised to repeal the carbon tax if the Liberal Party wins the September federal election. This was announced just before we hit 400 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. And we do need to bear in mind that there are plenty, plenty, plenty of wingnut-flavored, right-wing, dangerous, creepy types there. Oh, yes. Lots of them. On the radio, in the government. Robert says, by the way, Do the Math is available to watch, and you can download it with Firefox, and it's a little download plugin on YouTube. Recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it. I know the leader of the Federal Liberal Party hasn't. And three, watching the news last night, police in Australia are extremely concerned about an increase in gun crime. We do have it here, but nothing like the U.S. Thanks to the moron in the U.S. who released his 3D plastic guns plans on the Internet. This will make guns far easier for criminal elements to obtain, said the police chief. Possession of such firearms is illegal in Australia, and anyone caught with one will be charged. Well, you know, that's because you guys aren't free. Robert concludes, the police are also worried about people hurting themselves if and when these guns explode when fired, which they will. And Darlene, with a good question for the evening, shouldn't this Santilli SOB be investigated by the FBI? How about the Secret Service question this freak at least? Or will the right wing, emboldened by the IRS lie, which it is, start screaming about how they're being targeted again, how they are being persecuted? This is not free speech. It is incitement to violence. Exactly. And it's time that we actually did think a little bit about the difference between incitement and free speech. And finally, just because I love this stuff so much, a quote from the histories of Polybius. A lot of people read Herodotus and Dio Cassius. Polybius is quite fascinating because he was present for some actual history when it was happening. And he writes about the classical world of Roman Greece. And he had this to say about his own era. When a commonwealth, after warding off, which is another kind of way of saying republic in his language, when a commonwealth, after warding off many great dangers, has arrived at a high pitch of prosperity and undisputed power. Sound like anybody we know? It is evident that by the lengthened continuance of great wealth within it, the manner of life of its citizens will become more extravagant, and that the rivalry for office and in other spheres of activity will become fiercer than it ought to be. The rivalry for office and in other spheres of activity will become fiercer than it ought to be. Fierce enough, perhaps, as to actually be deleterious to the culture. Two thousand years ago, that was written. And somehow or another, it manages to hold true now. It's exactly where we are, isn't it? So here endeth this Moran Monday's first hour's filibobster. Jump in with your nominations, your comments, your thoughts. 304-658-3333 is the number. On the Skype, you can always reach the program at Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. I look forward to the conversation. Take a little break and come back. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address. Either way, works very nicely. And I know it means a lot to Robert when we band together to make things better. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Hey, Ron, thanks for the bumper.
This is for you, Adam Kokesh, who's got the man against him.
You must get up, ignite it, and skank with me, please. Skank with me, brother. Skank with me, sister. Skank with me, I and I. How about a hand for those who tend the field?
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. It's Moran Monday for this Monday, the 20th of May, 2013. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. Happy news in via Darlene, who went and ran around and checked out the interweb tubes during the break and found something worth celebrating. Darlene says, "Woohoo! A rare occasion where I got my wish." And what she means by that is a story. You can find it at Raw Story. Secret Service probes right-wing radio host for threatening Hillary Clinton. But to be fair, he didn't just threaten Hillary. He said he wanted to do the same thing to Barack Obama. In talking about the fact that the Secret Service told Talking Points memo that the agency was aware of Mr. Santilli's comments and will take the appropriate follow-up action. That does not mean, however, Mr. Santilli, or any lurking little weirdo right-wingers that happen to be around here, that does not mean that you're being persecuted. It means that, the spokesperson noted that Santilli had a right to free speech, but added, but see, even there, we fail to comprehend the meaning of the phrase. Of course he has a right to free speech. And that right to free speech means that the government does not have a right to suppress it, except in very narrowly tailored circumstances, one of which is incitement. Now, the skirts that he will hide behind in this instance are the fact that he says he wants to do it. He's not telling anybody else to do it. Is this what you got to do to get noticed? If that's the case, I don't want to get noticed. I'm really, really happy with the peaceful, decent, thoughtful little community we've built here. I don't even want to disgrace this segment by referring to what I said on my show, because I say what I say, and I think you already know that. We've already had discussions about that. I say what I say. But I'm going to tell you this, I was very specific in my commentary that's all over the press today in that regard, that I don't want her to die. I've actually done something and said something that's less humane. I want her to suffer. In other words, he doubled down. Whereas people like you, who are rational and logical and lawful and constitutional, he's talking to whatever weirdo little audience he has, want to bring the death penalty to her by hanging for treason. I want the opposite. I want to shoot her in the vagina and let her suffer right before my eyes on behalf of all the people who have died at her hands. In other words, he said it twice. And I invite your thoughts on this. Do you just leave this alone and let it die down and say, oh, well, you know, those right-wingers, they're like that. They can't help but talk in eliminationist language. They're like the people who spoke in metaphor on Star Trek The Next Generation, and it's all just Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra when the walls came down. It's just the metaphor, you know, blood and gore and death and sexual violence. That's just the metaphor that the right wing speaks in, and they can't help it any more than if they were speaking lower Urdu. Just like Adam Kokesh, it's all a matter of being persecuted by the government just for trying to be free. Freedom. Wolverines. Great googly moogly. But what do you do? Oh, God, I sound like Carl Malden in that old American Express commercial. What will you do? What will you do? What do you do when what passes for dialogue in this country is nothing more than extremist rhetoric designed to generate press? I don't know. I know that unlike him, I'm not going to sit here and say what and tell you what I want done to. I can tell you what I don't want done to it. I don't want him waterboarded for this. I don't want him shot, boiled, beaned, baked, broiled. Santilli scampi, boiled Santilli, Santilli etouffee. No. I just want a country that wants to have an honest conversation with itself. But this is another one of those instances where it feels like that's impossible. Because on the one hand, there's us on this side, and we say things like, you know, I'd like to have a meaningful conversation about how we provide health care to people who badly need it in this country. And the other side responds by saying, I want to shoot him in the vagina! And the guy who says that gets news stories written about him, while the people who really, really want to have an earnest conversation about how we continue that little experiment that's embodied in the preamble of the Constitution, where we try to create a more perfect union, well, we're just not exciting enough. Oh, by the way, thanks, Sal. And thanks, Tosh. And we are now at $60 to finish up meeting Robert's $150 gift for the evening that will take care of one night's broadcasting. Thank you very much. All right, 304-658-3333. Lines are open. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's me. This guy right here, you're talking about, we all believe in freedom of speech and that it should not be impeded on. That being said, what he says is, it's almost worse than death. It's cruel and unusual punishment.
No, he's saying he wants to torture her.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. He wants to torture her and provide a slow and cruel way of dying. I imagine a wound like that would be deathly. Not to mention he was willing to do it to the president, too. Which, we can figure what he means there when he says the president, for whatever reason. But it seems like at the very least, maybe the FCC could step in and, instead of saying, whoopsie, you said fuck, we're going to yank your license because you're inciting violence against someone, whether you... And he's not even saying it was an accident or a miswording, or he doubled down and said it again.
Yeah.
So he shows no intent of backing down or saying, hey, you know what, I took it too far, you're right, I'm sorry.
No. That's the thing, Jeremy. No, he wants something to be done, because you see the weird place that the right wing is in this country is such that they are thrilled to pieces at anything. They made Mr. Santilli stop speaking his patriotic teabagging truth. That just means that, you know, that Obama administration, they hate freedom and Christians. Right? He's yearning. He's yearning for the government to come and do something to him. Maybe he'll resist him with his freedom protecting firearms.
That'll last real good against a parade of SWAT troops.
Just kind of juxtapose this for a moment. This asshat who is telling, I don't know what kind of listenership he has, but he's telling people that he wants, never mind whatever we would find in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 4th or 5th edition or whatever we're on these days, about what kind of psychologically sick human being he is. He's telling people that he wants to torture a human being, and frankly, once you get past the governmental angle of it, saying that you want to shoot a female in her genitals, that's sick is not the word for it.
No, you're right, it isn't, because when I heard it, it made my stomach turn. Oh, that's taking it above beyond the don't know.
but you know that'll but see, he's getting his 15 minutes of fame now.
Right, because he's being dragged through the media cycle by everyone, and he's getting kind of what he wants. And
I plead guilty too.
Right. Well, even I am at this point because now I'm engaged in it too. It's hard because things like this sometimes catapult some of these creeps to higher places because they got their shock value, or, oh my God, this guy can draw people in with negative or positive attention. Sometimes stations don't care. I mean, this kind of goes back to the whole Rush saying the fluke thing. They didn't care what he said. It's the fact that he lost the money. Now, if this guy can make money saying this, he's on more of a big company like Clear Channel. They won't even think a second thing of it.
You think they'll bring him? You think that they will? I mean,
I don't. I think this one is a bit heftier than Sandra Fluke's a slut, which we all know she wasn't. But I think this is a bit heavier than that. That was a pretty mean thing to say, but he's not saying that he wants to shoot her in her genitals and watch her bleed out slowly and die because of the people that died at her hands or whatever. I think this one is above. I don't think he'd be pulled up. I'm just saying, in this case, if someone like Rush could make money saying this, they wouldn't care that he said it as long as it made money. I don't think they're going to give this little pimple any more time than he already has. This actually might even seal his own fate in some ways.
Well, I just checked real quick to make sure he hadn't gotten a Wikipedia entry yet. And now, I want to be clear about something. This is not the same creep who started the teabagging business with his rant on CNBC. That's Rick Santelli.
Right. No, I realize they're two different people.
Okay.
I was going to say as a quick update to the whole Rush contract issues. It is no longer just him that's in jeopardy losing their job. Sean Hannity's on a chopping block now too, because he has lost substantial revenues in the last couple of years for his crazy echoings of what Rush has said, other than saying Sandra Fluke's a boop.
So yeah, the folks in the home office have said, "Don't you dare." And see, that's the thing. That's the thing we need to understand. The First Amendment only applies to governmental action to suppress speech. The fact of the matter is, and it proves their hypocrisy, what these right-wingers are all pissed off about is the fact that the free market is busting their ass. You know, because they love the free market until it's... Actually, they don't love the free market. They love a captive market that they can manipulate as they see fit.
Right.
But right-wing talk radio has become toxic. And there are even... Well, I don't know if you saw the story over the weekend, but Frank Luntz, you know, the word wizard of right-wingery, where he tells people to, you know, don't say this, say that, that kind of stuff.
Right.
He admitted, but he got 47% videoed because somebody captured him saying it. He said, "Listen, Rush Limbaugh is a problem." And he said it to about 100 right-wing college students. Well, now it's out there. And the fact of the matter is, even the head of Cumulus Media says, "Yeah, Rush Limbaugh's a problem." And the format is taking a beating, but it's still there. And frankly, even if their numbers went through the floor, it would never be replaced by, say, progressive conversation, because that's not allowed. If anything, it'll just roll over to a new right-wing talker, or it'll roll over to sports talk, or, I don't know, a 10 kilohertz test tone, because there's somebody out there that will listen to the 10 kilohertz test tone until they get to the commercials about bowling balls and vacuum cleaners and mattresses and baldness and erections.
And Bob, even then, they'll probably still listen because they're too damn lazy to change the channel or get up.
Oh, yeah. No. They're fine with that 10 kilohertz test tone. It makes my ears bleed after a while, but right winger, whatever. If they tell them it's patriotic to listen to a 10 kilohertz test tone, by God, they will. because they're Atne Ute Eitbre. Yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot the buy gold now part.
Yes, buy gold now.
There'll never be a better time.
No, and that whole market fell to the floor there pretty quick, or a good substantial fall off on the gold prices. I mean,
And the other thing I've learned a little bit about, but not nearly enough, in the last couple of weeks, is Bitcoin.
Yeah, Bitcoin was really, it started off really small. I heard a big story about this not too long ago. At one point, something like $15 would get you 20,000 Bitcoins, or maybe it was even $1,000, but whatever it was, a small amount, and you get some massive amount. Well, some of these factions of drug lords and stuff like that, we're seeing into this from other people. There's a set amount of Bitcoins that never go beyond a certain amount you could get. But they flooded the market, and people who bought in early literally could become millionaires. They sold out their amount. People did that, and Bitcoin fell. But the government caught on to it, and that's why they went through and shut it down.
Yeah, well, the guy who set up Mt. Gox apparently told a little bit of a fib. He said he wasn't a currency exchange, but it was pretty clear that he was exchanging currency.
Right, yes, you could sell off your Bitcoins for actual electronic cash one way or another, and you would have money for it, even though it was never not really a currency.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it's a non-governmental currency, I guess.
Right.
But I find that fascinating because, oddly enough, Bitcoin is one of those places where a lot of right-wingers have run off to after they got their asses handed to them in gold. Well, you know, when the collapse comes, I'll have my Bitcoins, and we'll be able to barter and swap and trade just like a real free market would. Except, you know, genius, it's tied to the internet, and how are you going to get to the interweb tubes when the Chi-Coms take down the net with their electromagnetic field radiation ray gun?
You know, there's someone out there thinking and saying that too. That's the funny part.
Well, no, I mean, I like I said, I've done a little reading and research, and there's a whole lot of right-wing nuttery in the Bitcoin universe. Because, see, all them other currencies is going to collapse.
Right, it's put all your faith in some finite amount, just like a finite amount of gold will ever be found on the earth. And we probably will never run out, but it'll become just like oil. It'll be scarcer and scarcer and harder. Actually, it won't even become more scarce. It'll be harder and harder to get to become feasible to mine it. And from what I've heard, gold we've already mined 75% of the gold that would be easily accessible, such as we've done to a lot of the oil already. And now we're coming up with these more extravagant ways of mining oil, like slant drilling, where they drill down 3 miles and then drill sideways 7 miles, and if it blows out 5 miles into the slant, how are they going to stop it?
Yeah.
I mean, we just had that oil rig this winter. They had to move because the fucking ice was going to hit it.
I mean, it was bobbing like a cork.
Yeah, but still, they moved it because the ice was going to get it.
Right. Yeah. Oh no, I get it. And then I guess, I'm looking at my Facebook page, and Beth put something up there. There's let's see here. Enbridge has notified the press about a 2,500-barrel spill this past Saturday at its Cushing terminal in Oklahoma. While the news media is referring to the spill as a crude oil spill, this was probably taken directly from an Enbridge press release. It is very likely this was a tar sands spill.
That's
nice, huh?
I mean,
and then Texas Betsy asks, what happens if a Class 5 tornado hits the Keystone Pipeline? Well, if it's above ground, I mean, 200 plus miles an hour, strange things happen. I mean, I've seen crazy stuff after a tornado. I've seen a piece of a 2x4 driven like a nail through a telephone pole.
Well, yeah, the same thing happens down in Florida in hurricanes, or even on the Gulf Coast in hurricanes. Trees will be pinned into houses, or branches, little thin branches, will be shoved into the side of a house like a nail gun.
Yeah.
But the thing, notice we don't hear any more about the Arkansas spill after they declared a no-fly zone and no more media coverage of it. The kind of hush factor, you don't hear about it anymore.
Right. Because they were successful in their clampdown. I mean, Jesus, the corporation declared a no-fly zone.
Yes, they did. And then there was a great deal of talk that they were actually diverting it out of that town into a near wetland to be cleaned up in the wetland, which was in the no-fly zone.
Yeah.
And it, you know what a cleanup probably consists of there is more of those chemicals they've used in the Gulf. They sink it to the bottom and forget it was there.
Jesus.
Even though they say a vast portion of the Gulf of Mexico is now dead and may not ever come back. And then when scientists go out to the Gulf Coast and take little submersibles down, it's down in pockets, 100 feet here, 50 feet there, 2 feet in some places.
Well, I mean, look at...
It never went away.
And you know, that's one of those wet parts of the globe. Look at this story about Kansas. I mean, this is just a straightforward New York Times news article. And no, it's not about global warming. No, it's not about the pipeline. It's about the fact that even absent this kind of lunacy, that kind of lunacy, our simple urge toward consumption for the sake of consumption will do us in. I mean, there are, and the article, for instance, goes on to talk about parts of Texas where the aquifers dried up, and when the water goes away, the community goes away. There are ghost towns now, and there will be ghost towns where the water dries up. And yet we do want to, you know, some people want to run the Keystone Pipeline through aquifers that are already challenged, threatened. Good God.
Do you possibly hear, I can't think of what country it is, I want to say it was Central or South America, I could be wrong on that, but some company was building a road and they tore down a temple, basically a pyramid, a true pyramid.
Yeah, that was actually on the Moran list for tonight, Jeremy. That's Belize, where a possibly 2,000, 2,500-year-old Mayan temple was torn apart to get gravel for a roadbed. And that's one of those stories I read, and I come damn near crying.
Now, this story happened on a much larger scale in Egypt. About 100 years ago, people decided they wanted marble, and the pyramids were pretty much cased with marble, so they had a nice kind of a shiny gloss to them. Well, they wanted that marble, so that's why the pyramids are breaking down. Now, they stripped the finite layer off the top of it, and most of the Egyptian artifacts that weren't buried in the sand, they did the same thing, too.
Yeah.
That's why they're in such bad disrepair now.
Well, there's a Walmart on top of an ancient Toltecatl burial ground near the ancient city of Teotihuacan. I read an article about that over the weekend. The author referred to it as Mayan. It wasn't Mayan. It was Mexica, blah, blah. But Walmart bribed officials in order for them to look the other way so they could build their stinking store on top of ancients, burials, cities, whatever. And, you know, you have to do the dirt work to build one of those godforsaken places. And Lord only knows what was lost in the process, but that's not the only one. Then there's Alabama. There's Alabama, Jeremy, where Walmart is going ahead with plans to level a Native American pyramid. You know, they just call them mounds in the U.S. It's not a mound; it's a freaking pyramid, but it happens to be earthen in nature. And they're going to level that to bring economic prosperity and jobs. And again, this is something that's 1,000, 1,500, maybe 2,000 years old.
The one I heard from Japan is probably a lot older than that.
And then, you know, not too far from me, our Wally World over in Fayetteville was actually built on top of a Civil War battlefield. My friend Matt Sherman years and years ago pushed and pushed and pushed back until Walmart more or less abandoned a plan to build a Walmart up in Morgantown, West Virginia, on top of a bunch of native burials.
I was going to say, now, speaking of battlefields, since we mentioned the Civil War, and I'm sure that Jim and a few other people are probably going to testify to this, too. Have you ever been to Gettysburg?
Oh, yes.
When you go there, there is, to this day, still a resonance there. It's hard to explain. It's like an energy still in the air. In some ways, it's almost like a low-grade tone in the air. You can hear it. It's just there. And I can't imagine someone like Walmart coming in and saying, hey, we're going to clear this field out. I mean, you want to talk about bad karma.
Oh, but they sure would. But then again, Gettysburg is a prime example of what happens when ground is not protected. I mean, you can stand where Pickett's Charge took place, and you know you can see a McDonald's and a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, I remember when I was there too. You can see some horrendous things from the battlefield, which have nothing to do with death, but they're just as bad because, I mean, we can all clearly understand this is sacred ground. It probably should never have been touched.
And then, you know, when I go to D.C. and back, I often stop in Manassas, and lo and behold, there's all kinds of stuff all over all kinds of Civil War history there. I mean, the place is just absolutely blown up with commercialized sprawl. We don't give a good old-fashioned damn about our heritage.
Certain places do, but it's very protected in those places. I mean, I'd like to say in Vermont we do, but in Vermont we're almost as bad as everywhere else now. We're letting big box stores come in. I mean, Walmart's building a brand new super center near the Canadian border, which is about a half an hour from where I live. Got one in my town. They're both going to be shitholes in the end. Target's badly fighting to get in here. Trader Joe's has just been approved to be here, which they're probably one of the less of the evils. They're still bad in their own ways. We're just slightly better than other parts of the country. We still will mow down fields. Almost anywhere if you were to go out anywhere within 50 miles of here, probably within the last 50 years, and dig, you could find an arrow from the Native Americans. Arrowhead in the ground.
See, this is one of those times when I wish I could believe in some of that supernatural stuff, Jeremy, because I would like for it to be like, which movie was it where Little Tiny Drew Barrymore said, "They're here." What was that, Poltergeist?
No, that wasn't Drew Barrymore. That was someone else. She's dead. She died.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Was it Poltergeist?
That was Poltergeist, yes.
See, I would like, I would revel the thought, you know, well, see, I'm just as bad as that Santilli creep. You know, he wants to shoot people in their genitals. And me, I want 2,000-year, the ghosts of 2,000-year dead Native Americans to sort of just hover over the bed of the CEO of Walmart and vomit ghost goo on them every time they talk about bulldozing an effing pyramid in order to put in one of their retail stores. And that makes me a bad person.
See, Vermont has something, and someone will probably correct me if they live here too. It's something to do with, I think, Act 250, where if you want to come in and do something, they have to do a land study, especially if it's near a river or near Lake Champlain, which is in the town I live in, and 100 miles of Vermont is coastline to it. It was all Native American land, and still to some extent is. I mean, the Abenakis live in New York, and they were one of the tribes that were around here for the last few centuries. Actually, probably even more than that, 1,000 years. So, we're erasing our history here, too, just a little bit slower than the rest of the country.
Well,
we found a whale skeleton in rocks here. Actually, a fossilized whale skeleton because
wow.
It used to be an ocean.
Yeah, and we all remember that the right-wing answer to why there are ancient sea life fossils in the rock strata of West Virginia, it's because of the movement of the Titanic plates.
You said that too, not to mention about 10 miles from where I'm standing right now, there's an ancient coral reef, probably one of the oldest ones in the world. Scientists come from world round to come study fossils here in Vermont.
But, you know, if Walmart needs to put a store there, fossils got
to
go.
It wouldn't be a second thought to it. They'll just say, dig it up and put it in a box somewhere. But I'll get off and let someone else talk now. I've talked long enough. But
hey, Jeremy, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
You have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont, where even there the history is under assault. Heritage is under assault. 19 minutes before the hour, lines open either on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or on the regular phone lines, 304-658-3333. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Oh, okay. I remember that song by Joni Mitchell.
They paved paradise?
They put up a parking lot.
Yeah, I guess they really hadn't invented Walmart that well by then, or else they paved paradise and put up a big box store.
Yeah, but the trouble is, with Walmart, they don't buy the land. They lease it.
Right.
Is that not so?
Yeah, all their stores are under lease. The land's under lease. Yeah.
Therefore, they pay no taxes or anything like that because of the lease agreement.
Right.
And they contribute absolutely nothing to the community. And the only thing they do is destroy the downtown of said community. And people think they're just wonderful.
Yeah, I know.
I just can't deal with those people. I don't like to go out and shop anyway, but the last place you'll ever find me is in a Walmart.
Oh, it's a grim and crappy experience.
And, you know, to read the history of that family and stuff like that, and Sam Walton and his successors, it's just absolutely sickening. It really is. But, you know, these Indian mounds that you were talking about, are they not under the protection of the Department of the Interior?
No. Not if they're on private property.
Well, I would think that eminent domain would have to take over in a situation like that as far as the preservation of historical antiquities.
No. I mean, no. I mean, I wish it was otherwise. But.
Are these ceremonial mounds or burial mounds?
They can be either one. I mean, I'm looking for the Alabama story right here, right now.
Because there were two types. And the ones I'm familiar with were ceremonial mounds. And basically how they were built. Basically, the Indians took skins and put dirt on the skins and hauled them up and built the mound up. And on top,
or baskets. I mean, there was basket weaving technology.
But in this case, in the Chestnut Adams mound down the Watery River in South Carolina, that's how they did this. And of course, on top there was the shaman's hut. And my dad and I used to go with an archaeologist who worked for, National Geographic. And, of course, I was just like in my teens, early teens, stuff like that. And there were a lot of vines we'd swing on them. But I can remember them excavating with toothbrushes in very small instruments. And you could see the carbon where the shaman's hut had burned down. And not to mention
the soil doesn't lie, and the soil will hold secrets for thousands of years. I mean, the little experience I had, there's nothing, you know, you'll be digging along, and then you'll see this round black mark, and lo and behold, it's a post hole.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's the stain that was left in the soil from the decomposition of a wooden post. Or the baked earth evidence of fire. Sure. This story out of Alabama. City leaders in Oxford, Alabama have approved the destruction of a 1,500-year-old Native American ceremonial mound and are using the dirt as fill for a new Sam's Club, a retail warehouse store operated by Walmart. University of Alabama archaeology report commissioned by the city found that the site was historically significant as the largest of several ancient stone and earthen mounds throughout the Chocoloco Valley. But Oxford Mayor Leon Smith, whose campaign has financial connections to firms involved in the $2.6 million no-bid project, insists the mound is not man-made and was used only to send smoke signals. Well, even if it was used only to send smoke signals, that means it's a cultural relic.
Smoke signals? Is that what he said?
Yeah, that's what he said, Jim.
Well, he's full of shit.
Yes, but he's also nicely...
And I can tell you this, if that's what we will do to the memory of or having respect for our ancestors, or the ancestors of the land in which we live, then what kind of respect do you think that the foregoing generations are going to have for those who come after?
Well, it's like George W. Bush said, Jim, who cares? We're all going to be dead. And he who dies with the most money wins. That's how they think. That's how their pathetic, greed-besotten minds work. I mean...
Oh, I know.
Let's look at it this way. We didn't blanch about committing genocide in the first place, so I guess we're just not that worked up about destroying the last physical evidence of these peoples either.
Well, it's just not us, Bob. I mean, look what the English and other explorers did when they first came into the land of Egypt. I mean, they literally...
Elgin Marbles, anyone?
Well, I mean, let's just talk about Egypt. I mean, we can get into Greece later. But nonetheless, I mean, at least the Elgin Marbles are preserved. But in Egypt, a lot of stuff was just destroyed by these archaeologists who went in there, like Belzoni and some of the others. And even Howard Carter. I mean, look what Howard Carter did to the mummy of Tutankhamun, or Tutankhamun. I mean, it was literally just destroyed. And what these people didn't finish, I guess Lake Nasser has covered up the rest of it. And I can remember the greatest thing when I was a kid is when they actually moved the statues at Abu Simbel of Ramesses II,
right,
300 meters up, so it would not be engulfed by the waters of Lake Nasser. And it was done by UNESCO. So, I mean, you know, it...
But there has been a concerted effort to be a little more sensitive to these sorts of things. But it's still a struggle. I mean, I've got a story out of the Tibet Post, Dateline Dharamshala in Tibet, that the Chinese government has begun to demolish the ancient capital of Lhasa.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And they're building shopping, and you know, for the purpose of building parking garages and shopping malls.
Well, the Dalai Lama had to evacuate that back in the, what, late 40s when the Chinese, or early 50s when the Chinese Empire began to expand into that area?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I saw some statistics that, like, every 5 minutes in China, someone might correct me, but I think I saw this right, that every 5 minutes or every 70 minutes, the plans and the actual erection of a skyscraper in China is not only conceptualized, but brought into reality. I mean, where can they go with so much building? I mean, how much building can they do with these structures that are built to last how many years?
Well,
not many.
No.
Not at all.
Jesus.
I mean, like I say, if you don't respect the past, how can you have any respect for the future?
And how can you expect the future to have any respect for you?
Well, the two are symbiotic. I mean, you know, one goes with the other, and without one, you don't have the other, in my opinion. And you were talking about aquifers earlier. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand there's one huge one that the Libyans have been going at under the Sahara. Or at least they were under the realm of Gaddafi.
It wouldn't surprise me, but anything has got to be way down.
They were drilling towards it, but nonetheless, you know, as you said before, once these aquifers are drained, that's ancient water. It's not going to be replaced. I mean, that water has been there for a long time.
Well, that was any aquifer under the Sahara. That water was there when the Sahara was a grassland.
Exactly.
Because there had to have been rain falling.
Oh, yeah, of course, for it to drain down into the soil and collect underneath those.
Right, and charge, you know, and charge the aquifer.
Well, I don't know what progress they've made on that particular aquifer, but I know that was one of Mahathir's big things, that he was going to drill underneath there in order to make Libya water self-sufficient. Only problem being is, it's a finite resource, and once it's dry, what were they going to do then?
See, there's a level of forethought that most cultures don't engage in. The fact that we're learning to engage in them is inspiring, but you got to sit down and ask on more than one occasion, is it too little, too late? I mean, look, Jim, you and I, when you're not residing in P-town, we understand.
Provincetown.
Yeah. You and I live in one of the most well-watered parts of the entire United States.
Okay.
But that water is being turned toxic. When you take coal sludge and, you know, toxic waste and inject it underground, it affects aquifers too. And when you build 9 billion gallon impoundments for that toxic waste, well, it's not just sitting there, it's leaching in as well. And so while this is one of the most well-watered parts of the entire United States, it has all the potential to become one of the most toxic. Well, it already is. I had occasion to drive on Saturday down into the Coal River Valley. And driving down there, if you don't know that mountaintop removal's there, you're thinking, my God, this is some of the most beautiful country I've ever seen in my life. And then you top a hill and make a turn, and you see that there's a haze. And it's not a hazy day, but there's a haze sitting over the valley. And after you stand around outside and you kind of go, and you realize you're tasting the air, and you go, holy crap, I'm breathing the poison.
Of all the stuff that's coming out from under?
No, the detritus from the blasting, the dust.
Yeah, well, I know very well what you're talking about, but nonetheless, it's just incredible how little respect that people have for their own history and their own legacy. And
you know, well, you have to know it before you can respect it, Jim.
Well, they know what they're doing. They just don't care. I mean, people have, there have been enough awareness groups around to make them aware of what they're doing. And there have been a lot of people who have been quite upset about this particular thing, but they continue to march forward. And, you know, sort of like
construct. Yeah, because we need jobs.
They want to construct some type of land of Mordor or something like that. I don't know.
Well, there's a story here in this account of the destruction of the pyramid in Alabama. A local resident named Johnny Rollins told the Anniston Star how his Native American grandmother taught him that when she died, he could go to that mountain to talk to her. It seems like it's taking part of you away, he said of the demolition. I always felt I had ties to that there.
Those mounds have tremendous spiritual significance to the Native Americans who built them, or if they wouldn't have built them.
Oh, I've sat on a couple that wound up having tremendous spiritual influence on me. And I'm the non-spiritual guy, remember?
When
when you're walking around and maybe it's just me, but when you're walking around places that have been walked around on, you know, for a fact for 3,000 years, and your feet are landing on places that feet landed on 3,000 years ago, if you take a nanosecond to consider that, you will not be the same.
Well, exactly. I don't think any thinking person would, because I've experienced the same thing, to know that, you know, where my feet were standing X number of thousands or hundreds of years ago were constructed by people who had some type of idea in mind for their own religion or their own practice of fame. And, you know, you've got to have respect for that. But I guess these people don't.
You know, it's interesting, out of this Alabama story, closes by saying, for now it appears Oxford officials are pressing ahead with the project. As Mayor Leon Smith said in its defense, what it's going to be is more prettier than it is today. More prettier.
Well, he sounds like a very erudite gentleman.
More prettier. It reminds me of the, time that I was over in Beckley with Agnes, and we stopped for a thing of frozen custard. And I said, I wanted the chocolate. Agnes wanted the strawberry. And the woman looked at me and said, well, all right, but you need to know the strawberry is more runnier than the chocolate. More runnier. I mean, we don't all have to use the Queen's English, but for God's sakes, there are rules here. More runnier.
There are no rules with a lot of these people.
And that Sam's Club's going to be more prettier than any old 1,500-year-old engine, ma'am.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, these people have no sense of, number one, they're illiterate, functionally illiterate. And I don't know how many, as far as the percentage of the American population is concerned, can be considered functionally illiterate. I would say their numbers are increasing daily with each, vastly with each passing day.
I would say so. And just as an example of that, I've been meaning to bring this up, and I'm glad you offered the opportunity, Jim. A friend of mine was given for his birthday a commemorative New York Times, and it was the great moments in West Virginia University sports history as reported by the New York Times. And it was printed on newsprint, and it was printed at full size from, and it would be an entire page from, say, Sunday the something of November 1922.
A banner headline?
No, not just a headline. It would be the whole page. And you'd see the news story there about WVU winning a football game or a basketball game or something. And this is not about the sports aspect of it. I read those articles from 1922, 1923, 1924. And the language is entirely different. And it is written on a level of comprehension that is miles ahead of the best journalism we have to offer today. And it was just the sports section, Jim.
Well, I mean, you can listen to television and hear the grammatical, the disagreement between subject and predicate and nominative pronouns and things of that nature. I mean, these are people who are paid six-digit salaries, and yet they can't even speak the king's English or the queen's English, as it were, you know? I mean, I catch him every day, at least once or twice. I said, who in the hell taught this guy? Where did he go to school? I mean, doesn't he realize that, you know, the difference between an objective and a nominative pronoun at the end of the sentence?
They don't. There's a lot of people out there that don't even know that's what it is.
I think it speaks very well to the level of education to which this country has dropped, and it's heartbreaking, really. Because language is very important. And a lot of times I might not speak as well as I would like to. But I take very great pride in what I read and also what I write.
Well,
and if you lose your sense of pride about your own native tongue and stuff like that, I mean, you're just going downhill.
And the other side of that argument is, what does it matter as long as the meaning is comprehended?
Well, the meaning isn't comprehended because there are only so many changes you can make. That the meaning is, I mean, there is no there. There is no meaning there.
I mean, I fear that we sound rather curmudgeonly in this little exercise, Jim.
I don't think so at all.
But I see in so-called professional, well-respected blogs every day, I see these moments where I just want to type in, I suppose the editor was dead today.
Well, as far as they're concerned, the only type of quality assurance might be these people, spell check.
Well, I remember what Dr. John offered the other day about the demise of copy editing and how he said that the stuff that goes on online is not subjected to nearly the scrutiny of what is actually printed.
Oh, good Lord, no. Oh, Lord, no. I mean, the Internet has become an absolute...
linguistic wasteland?
Yeah, I guess so. It has, indeed. I mean, you know, people are just looking for sensationalism without any sense of style or whatever. But, I mean, for example, you open your program by hearing this idiot speaking about shooting Secretary Clinton in the vagina. I mean,
I guess we're lucky that's the word he used.
Well, I'm sure if he could have gotten away with it or...
he would have used something far more vile.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that ought to tell you something about the degradation of our own self-respect.
Or should I say more viler?
No, you can do without that.
See, I say that in jest, and it makes me want to grind my teeth.
I know. When you start going in your accents, I just wonder if you were sitting there wearing a pair of chaps.
No, overalls and a flannel shirt. We're not quite into the weather yet for doing naked radio.
Bib overalls.
Absolutely.
Oh, my Lord.
I'll swap the flannel shirt for Oxford cloth later in the season.
Well, as long as they don't have to have a drop seat, we're okay.
No, I'm modern that way. I'm all about zippers.
Ah, God, I tell you, the things that we see every day and the things that are just filled up with the stuff that's, you know, in the for-profit media and on television, it's just become like those viewing screens in Fahrenheit 451.
Well, pretty soon the TVs themselves will be the size of the viewing screens.
Well, you know, Frank Zappa once said something about in one of his songs, I'm gross and perverted, I'm sick and deranged, I'm the slime oozing down from your TV set.
Mm-hmm. I believe the name of that song is actually I'm the Slime.
It could be. And I can remember when I used to tell you that I was out on my painted pony with my zirconium-encrusted tweezers.
Yep. Just you and the pygmy pony over by the dental floss bush.
That's right. And I want to be a dental floss tycoon. Well, enough of this gibberish for me. But nonetheless, that's all I have to contribute.
All right, Jim. You have yourself a good evening. I'm glad you chimed in.
All right, you take care.
All right. See you, Jim.
Out. Bye.
Jim, who is calling from not far from here, but is known to, I don't know, summer in Provincetown. It's about 5 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break. Let's see. Yeah, that'll work. We'll take a break and come back. Your calls are welcome. 304-658-3333 or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. It's just that easy. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, one of these days we really are going to get the toll-free thing sorted out. It's on the list. Believe me, it is on the list. This is The Horn. It's 11 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. God help me, I love that Dire Straits song. That's from the Dire Straits album, 1978. Water of Love. Is that dobro or just slide guitar? Whatever it is, it's awesome. Let's go to the Skype line. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra. Uh-oh. Are you there? Hold on here. Oh, I see the problem. Stand by, Sandra.
Can you hear me?
I do. I hear you.
I can't hear you.
Just a sec.
Hello?
Be right to you.
Can you hear me now?
Do you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, I've got you. Confounded wires. Hey, Sandra, do you hear me?
Yeah, I'm not really hearing anything, so maybe it's on my end.
I'll be right back with you. I'm gonna take a moment, just a little silence here while I get the wires repatched. They got unpatched somehow. Stand by. Someday there's going to be a full-on production staff.
Thank you.
Well, we may have the problem sorted out. Sorry for that, but it drives me a little bit crazy when things don't work the way they're, you know, when the magic doesn't happen. Let's see if I got this fixed. Sandra, do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, so I found the cord that I kicked.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, it's...
Are we on air?
Oh,
are we
yes.
on air?
We are on air.
Oh, okay. Let me start cussing. No, I'm joking.
No, I've already done all that for you while off air.
I'm sure you have. I know it gets frustrating after a while, man. But, listen, I'm kind of a mile-wide tornado, 200 miles an hour. What the hell is that? That's outrageous, and it's so scary for those people. I mean, I just saw they now found 37 people dead so far. I mean, have you seen the damage on this thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's complete. It's total. It's absolute.
I'm like, I just, you know, I mean, I saw a headline in my paper that they rescued some little ones, mercifully. I'm glad to hear that, but my God, what the hell is a mile-wide tornado, Bob? What is that?
It's a disaster. It's a land hurricane.
They showed. I don't know if
I
that
mean,
was.
I saw that time lapse you sent, and
yeah.
It was just.
Well, did you see that? They said it was on the ground for 40 minutes. That's like an eternity.
Yeah, usually it pops down, it raises hell, and but.
Anyway,
I remember the first time I heard you use the phrase new normal. And now it's a 2 mile wide.
Is that what they're reporting now? It was 2 miles. I mean,
yeah, CNN reporting it's a 2 mile wide tornado.
But they said that they're still expecting more storms, or is that not right?
No. I think there are more cells if I read it correctly. I mean, I'm looking here to photograph of a mobile home that instead of being reduced to toothpicks was simply turned all the way upside down.
Oh my God. No, I just, you know, I can't even wrap my head around how much damage that is. I mean, so now they're what, getting reports in of the injury and death toll, or are they, cause they said they didn't think it was that many people injured, but there's no way looking at that damage. Oh my God.
Let's see. Bill Bunting with the National Ocean with NOAA said, "Our worst fears are becoming realized this afternoon. We certainly hope everyone heeded the warnings, but it's a populated area, and we just fear that not everyone may have gotten the word."
I mean, we're talking about the suburbs of a major... This is a major city now, right? Or is there...
No, this is... You're right, yes. And by the way, winds ranging between 166 to 200 miles an hour. You know, that's past what a hurricane can do.
Well, didn't they? I was reading some report that they had a tornado there in 99 that pushed closer to 300 miles an hour. I mean, it wasn't as wide, but that just sounds completely bonkers, too.
And it's always been there to a certain extent. This is just, I mean, it's a natural function of the geography and the weather patterns. You know, they don't have tornadoes. Tornadoes are almost an exclusively a North American phenomenon.
I mean, you don't have these sort of tornadoes in Europe or Australia, and that's a huge empty continent, you know?
Yeah. It's just the way the wind and the converge over North American flat spaces, and it's a huge flat space. But what's weird is that if we can step back from Oklahoma for a minute, I was watching weather maps earlier today, and they're showing hot spots in Wisconsin and northern Illinois. That's weird.
Well, no, I don't know if you noticed what those... it was some crazy-ass swings just in a matter of days. They had, like, 101 degrees in Omaha, and it was, like, 46 4 days earlier. I mean, what in the world? That's way strange.
It absolutely is, and ultimately, you know, that's climate change.
Yeah, well, Yeah, I'm about to read this book called, I bought it for my, idiot pad mini that I have, but, it's called Earth Masters. It's by, Clive Hamilton. And it's the dawn of the age of, climate engineering, geoengineering. And it's really disturbing what this guy's thesis is, because he's saying that this geoengineering is becoming the response from, right-wing think tanks who, by the way, are responding to something that they didn't believe.
Right.
So it's like, oh, okay, but you'll prescribe this geoengineering because it fits their worldview. Like, oh, we're going to allow people to spray sulfide aerosol in the upper atmosphere in the hopes of cooling the earth down. But here's the catch with that bullshit. If you start cooling it down, you better not stop, because once you release that, you're going to have this sort of instant warming, which, will effectively destroy everything.
Well,
so,
if I may be paranoid, what happens if you start cooling it and you can't stop it?
Well, I'm
Ice age
saying,
much?
Yeah, this just sort of this. But what's interesting about this, what I think will be interesting about this book, is how it's framed in the, right wing economic market hell that they are determined to say, well, we can still just burn up all these hydrocarbons now because we're going to control the climate. And, oh, you need monsoon rains in India to feed a billion people? Well, we might fuck that up, but, too bad. I mean, these are
the
sort of...
Well, did you happen to notice the story the other day about Mount Everest is melting?
Yeah, no. Listen.
And, those are waters that provide life to a billion or so human beings.
I
suspect, without turning this into the George Norrie part of the program, and you're not and I'm not, but there are people out there who kind of coldly say, well, the earth is overpopulated.
Well, yeah, there is. I know there's always the Malthusian slant with at the end of the day, these people who want to be in charge and, of everything, really wouldn't be too bothered, too fussed, if they got rid of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 billion people in their efforts. I know that. You know the mentality is there.
Oh, without a doubt.
But there's nothing more disturbing to me than the thought that these assholes can think that, oh, we can manage this too, and we're going to continue this infinite growth model no matter what. And it's just, instead of reducing carbon emissions, no, we're going to do this geoengineering, and we're in charge. You have nothing to say about it.
Yeah, but see, that's the consumptive petroleum hydrocarbon fanatic wet dream, that we can just find some magic bullet that will make everything we want to burn okay, and we'll just we'll drill baby drill, frack baby frack, and burn baby burn.
But this is the problem, though. We have people like Bill Gates who are backing this one scientist at Stanford, and there's another one at Harvard. This shit is, this is like for real, in the sense that there's huge money behind it. Also, Enron, not Enron, God, they're all the same, aren't they? Exxon is quietly funneling, money into this, quote, solution too. This is all kind of happening on the DL. If you're not, paying attention to this stuff, why would you know? But, I'm gonna, get stuck into this book. I'll let you know. You may want to check it out too, but, it's just, just when you think that, what in the world is next, it's these motherfuckers creating chemtrails trying to control everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, there isn't, I mean, I joke about George Norrie and everything, but there is an element of reality. Oddly enough, it was Kurt Vonnegut's brother Mark who invented cloud seeding back in the late 1940s or early 1950s. You know, what was it, silver nitrate?
Well, they do cloud seeding in China. Now, I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of benign type of geoengineering that's available, but, you know, this sulfide stuff is one of them. If you try to do that shit, you know, there's kind of no coming back, and they don't really know what the hell is going on, but what the problem is who's in charge again? And the people who are destroying the planet, you know, are going to get a hold of it and just continue destroying it, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't, you know, well, anyway.
And by the way, Angry Architect from Australia just sent me an email. He said, sorry, Bob, tornadoes are not just a North American thing anymore. And here's a story from BBC Europe. Tornado injures 11 near Bologna, Italy. And it's huge.
Oh. Okay.
Several houses damaged, 11 people hurt. And then, going back to what you said, lo and behold, there's this one. Australia, tornadoes sweep through towns. And this is out of the state of Victoria. And guess what? It looks just like, I mean, it looks like Joplin. It looks like Oklahoma. You know, just a town rendered into toothpicks.
Man, I mean, you know, because when I was in Australia, I saw some crazy weather, but I certainly never saw anything like, you know, tornadoes. Oh, man, that's, wow.
You know,
okay.
we're making the world safe for crazy weather. And if it's not bad enough, what I was talking about earlier, we have to talk about them as though they are sentient. You know, that it's targeting Oklahoma. Well, you know, by God, Sandra, if it's targeting Oklahoma, what's Oklahoma doing to get targeted?
I'm sure Pat Robinson can answer that for you.
And will in short order. Yeah, I'm looking at a story here from News Channel 4 KFOR Oklahoma City. They're reporting, as of an hour ago, 37 dead in one town.
Okay, so that's one. Wow. Okay.
And they say unconfirmed number of children at Moore's Plaza Towers Elementary. One family an entire family of four was killed when they tried to take shelter in a freezer.
So, oh, shit. God. Oh, so this is some sort of unfolding horror show, national tragedy, ongoing. Hell. Oh, no, that's terrible. Terrible, terrible for those people.
But again, and I'm not trying to be an asshole here, but again, you know, can somebody get a memo to Jim Inhofe real quick saying that will be the federal government that you hate stepping in to provide relief?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
but mostly, you know, it's Oklahoma, so mostly it's white folks, so, you know, we'll get on that pretty quick.
Well, yeah, I mean, no excuses. Already called him up and said, you know, we're going to have whatever you need. President, no excuses.
Oh, you mean the father of two daughters?
Oh, my God, no. See, you know, it was an ongoing Twitter hell I had with Isaac over the weekend because of
the speech
Mr.
to Obama.
Yes, it was just like these people completed a degree. They did a milestone, and you're going to lecture them about being a good husband, and, you know, it just was
disgusting. And not trying to be a rapper or a baller?
Well, yeah, no, that was also just bizarre. I mean, these are graduates, Bob. I'm like, what the hell? He didn't say that bullshit to Ohio State graduates.
No.
And it was just, I don't know, I just found the whole thing.
Well, over at the Atlantic, and tell me, Ta-Nehisi Coates?
Yeah, yep, that sounds about as good as I can come up with.
Okay, so, yeah, we'll just stand on that one.
We'll just stay Al Sharpton on that one.
Yeah. Shame on you.
Yeah.
But no, he took him down the road over this stuff.
Oh, did he? I have to read that because, you know, I don't always agree with his stuff, but he's a good writer and he's interesting.
Yeah, and he busted him on it. He referred to him as the scold of black culture.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, it's outrageous because this Corey Robin has some sort of post here. You know, I tweeted it and I said it's LBJ versus the Cosby Show, but you know, it's the same.
Well, but that's the question. See, this comes. It's an interesting juxtaposition, Sandra, because this happens at the same time that we've got finally, mercifully, like you noted on Twitter, we've got a little bit of pushback coming toward Harvard over supporting a eugenics degree.
I know. I'm so glad to see that because I'm sitting here, much like you, stupefied. Like, well, wait a minute. When they gonna start asking questions about how come you got MFers sitting for PhDs for this shit?
Yeah, and see that's the thing. When you think about the purpose of Rich Wine's thesis, you know, would President Not Sure go to a university that had a largely Hispanic graduating class and tell them what? No excuses. You've got to really speak great English, and
well, I mean, it's
and
just,
the answer
no.
is no, he wouldn't.
No, but he needs to get off that. I mean, thankfully, there's a fair amount of pushback coming behind that now, which is good because the majority of the time you just get other black folks nodding and saying, "Oh yes, our young people need to hear it." But I mean, you're starting to get some. Some pushback, and I'm glad to hear what you just said about that guy from the Atlanta. You know, because it is really I'm sick of it. You know, I am sick to death of his scold act. This wearing real thin. Now he's talking to accomplished people who have met a milestone, and that's all you got to say to them. They're competing with a bunch of Chinese, so they better not. Make excuses? I mean, this is the gist of it.
Coates writes, "This clearly is a message that only a particular president can offer. Perhaps not the president of Black America, but certainly a president who sees holding African Americans to a standard of individual responsibility as part of his job. This is not a role Barack Obama undertakes with other communities."
Yeah, now that's the problem. See, we're not talking about, you know, a quote, you know, Jimmy Carter, because I know he used to get that rap for being, you know, fairly... accused of being judged, but that was across the board. This man is only targeting black audiences. It's nonstop. It really is. I mean, this takes the cake, though, because we're not talking, you know, he's not talking to whatevers. He's talking to people who are playing by the rules, and they got to hear that?
Yeah, well, check this. He says, "It's worth revisiting the president's comments over the past year in reference to gun violence. Visiting his grieving adopted hometown of Chicago in the wake of the murder of Hadiyah Pendleton, the president said this, 'For a lot of young boys and young men in particular, they don't see an example of fathers or grandfathers, uncles, who are in a position to support families and be held up in respect. And so that means that this is not just a gun issue, it's also an issue of the kinds of communities that we're building. When a child opens fire on another child, there is a hole in that child's heart that government can't fill.'" You know, please, can we stop repeating right-wing talking points?
It's
and then he says, "Only community and parents and teachers and clergy can fill that hole." You know, so we've got to throw a bone to the damn clergy again.
Well, no one is saying that government needs to fill. That's the thing. It's like, you know, a bit of a red herring and straw man shit right there. It's really
well, yeah,
tedious.
But he's saying it before the right wingers can say it.
No, but it's just this, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess he's trying to get their approval because. You know, that sort of scolding is just getting really tedious, in the face of not having any kind of even Booker T. Washington had a program, Bob.
You know, it's funny you had mentioned Booker T. Washington.
Okay.
Because it's hard not to look at stuff like this and think about his idea of community.
No, but, okay, yeah.
And compare it against the people who said no, full integration. And full participation in society. And, you know, what, did we just pass the anniversary of Plessy versus Ferguson? Although I don't think anybody noticed something like that. There were so-called separate but equal communities, and some of them were quite brilliant. You know, there was a separate black community in Pittsburgh that was really dynamic, and you know, I don't pretend to understand what... It was periodically terrorized, of course,
Yeah, and the black newspapers were like a godsend in their heyday. So,
well, the
The
neat thing is after citing this quote about, you know, only community and parents and teachers and clergy can fill that hole, Mr. Coates says, 2 months earlier, Obama visited Newtown. The killer, Adam Lanza, was estranged from his father and reportedly devastated by his parents' divorce. But Obama did not speak to Newtown about the kind of community they were building or speculate on the hole in Adam Lanza's heart.
Mm.
So
No. It's just completely blatant. That's the thing. So, you know...
Well, there's an element of infantilization in it.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Paternalism, you know, this is... It almost smacks of the things that were said, you know, to Native peoples about, you know, your great white father in Washington.
No, but why in the world would Michelle tell a bunch of graduates not to aspire to be rappers and basketball players? I'm like, what the hell is she talking about? It's so weird. It's way bizarre. Anyway,
it represents a wholesale disconnect from actual community.
Well, no, but it's also very insulting, and, you know, turn the page on that shit. It's unbelievable at this point.
I mean, would you come to Appalachia and tell a bunch of hillbilly kids don't aspire to be a banjo player in a bluegrass band?
I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, it's just in face of what has actually been done to, uplift the black community from this administration, it's completely disgusting. They need to shut the hell up.
And the one thing that Mr. Coates points out is this is a community that voted they voted in greater numbers than any other demographic group in the United States, and they did so almost exclusively for Barack Obama. And for that, they get lectured?
Right. And not only do they get lectured, but I shudder at, you know, the agency going forward. Black agencies. I just, you know. Anyway, you know how I feel. I'm really
right. But at least we've got the other side of the coin out there in the form of this goon that just got elected to the Republican ticket for lieutenant governor in Virginia.
Oh, what, the Planned Parenthood is the same as the KKK? That freak?
Yeah.
Oh man, no, that's like a whole different kind of crazy. And not only that, but, you know, there's always the, I hear this BS from Obama, but then I gotta deal with this umbrella shit. And you're like, oh, what?
What the, was that?
Yeah.
What?
And so, you know, it's just, it really is, as a one person I follow wrote, you know, January 2017 can't come soon enough.
Just to get him to shut up and get off.
Just to move it on. I mean, but at this rate,
I watched that all shaken out. I mean, what was that, Sandra? I mean,
that was just crazy. White people can't deal with that Negro in the White House minute. That's what that was.
Well, you know, my tweet on it was that it was the same as, you know, Tom Robinson feeling sorry for Miss Mayella. You know, just can't do that.
It just, I mean, they just, you know, the mask come off and the hood just flies free with these people. It just keeps popping up, you know?
And popping up and popping up and popping up. I mean,
it's just hideous. But listen, I know your show is wrapping up, so I'll say goodnight.
Well, I appreciate you having the patience to wait for me to find the wire that I'd kicked loose.
Oh, that's fine. I'll send you a link to this this book if you want to check it out.
Oh yeah, please do. Please do, and go read the Coates piece. I'll be interested to see what you think.
For sure. Okay, have a good evening.
All right, see you, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
And then I guess we will save what is this Moran's name? In Virginia. We'll save him for tomorrow, I guess, for Titanic Tuesday. Under the heading New Normal, Jack in Shreveport writes, why is it that just the non-1% of us get the scolding, the accept the new normal, and that impeachment's off the table? Well, you know, it's because the other side are, you know, better than us. Ron and Raleigh writing, why target Oklahoma? The tornadoes hate Oklahoma for their freedom. 37 dead and climbing. You know, when you build a house in a floodplain, and the flood comes and the house gets washed away, and you hope people survive, but you say, well, you know, they built their house in a floodplain. And tornadoes are a fact of life in the great flat places of America, because I guess that's where tornadoes like to form. And anybody who knows The Wizard of Oz knows that places like Kansas have been dealing with tornadoes. Well, when did L. Frank Baum write the first installment in that series? 1890s. Native peoples dealt with them. But they are getting worse. Or at least it seems like they are. Do we chalk this up to the fact that that those areas of the country are growing and becoming more populous, that we're building more sprawl? Or do we maybe take into account the fact that the climate really is changing? Tornadoes in Bologna? In the state of Victoria in Australia? Now, see, L. Frank Baum was writing about a tornado at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, but I don't remember hearing a lot of tornado stories out of Europe and South Asia. I don't know. And by the way, thank you very much, all of you, for helping out in meeting Robert's Down Under challenge for the evening. Thanks to Tosh and Jeremy and Jan and Jerry and Sal. Thank you very much. And thank you, Robert, for getting it all started. So that's the close of the program this evening. Sorry for the dead air, but I can't stand issues like that, especially when I know that it should be easily solved. So again, thank you for your patience. Back tomorrow night with Titanic Tuesday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, who literally saved progressive radio on the Internet and has never sent a bill for it. Thanks to John Fox in Australia for all he does to keep the equipment going and the website behaving. Thank you, John. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. If you want to get involved in the best hope we have of ending mountaintop removal, go to acact.org, learn the science, learn the bill, and then get after your member of Congress. And even a letter to your senator won't hurt either. Bike Gata from San Francisco shared with me that she's been lettering Senator Feinstein, which is just awesome. Thanks, everybody. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.